Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Get a Job. I'm your host, Kathleen Brady, and I am a career life management coach with 25 years of experience helping people identify and achieve their goals. I'm also the author of Get a Job, 10 Steps to Career Success, which is available on Amazon. Our entire show is based on the content of that book. The purpose of the show really is to help job seekers navigate the chaos and isolation of looking for a job. So whether you have just graduated from college and you're looking for your very first job, or you are a mid-career changer and looking for a job, we're here to offer you some best practices, some tips and suggestions, take your calls and answer any questions you have. So as we go through the show, please write the number down. Feel free to call in. Our number is 646-716-9397. Now, I always like to start each show with a little bit of review of where we've been so that you know how all of the pieces of the job hunt fit together. In our very first show, we offered an overview, and we talked about the job search process from soup to nuts in very broad terms. Then in our second show, you might remember, we had someone come and talk to us about how to do market assessment and how helpful your public library can be in terms of doing that market research. So if you've not been over to your library, you want to go make friends with your librarian, because there's a whole wealth of information out there to help you with your job search. Then on our very last show, we focused on self-assessment in general and on the Highlands Ability Battery in particular. And we talked about the importance of self-assessment in terms of being able to know what it is you're selling. So you've done the market research, you know what needs to be done, you've done the self-assessment, hopefully, so you know now what you can do and where those two things intersect. Now you're ready to do your resume. And that's what tonight's show is about. Just to back up for a half second, though, if you're still working on the self-assessment piece, and that ought to be an ongoing piece that you do, remember, if you'd like a free copy of the Highlands Ability Battery book, Don't Waste Your Talent, just email me at kbrady@careerplanners.net, and we'll make sure you get a copy of Don't Waste Your Talent. So tonight, this is the part where people usually start their job search. They start with writing their resumes. So we really wanted to spend the hour really kind of getting in the weeds and talking through some of the details and answering your questions specifically on resumes. And I'm very excited tonight to have two guests with me tonight. And the first one is Maureen Provost Ryan. She is known in Long Island circles as the Resume Lady. She's a resume writer located in Smithtown, New York, and she's got over 35 years of experience working with professionals on career transition and specifically resumes. She is a member of the National Resume Writers Association. Maureen has worked in four different schools. She's worked at one law firm, and she's had her own private practice for many, many years now. And Maureen's claim to fame, I'm not even sure if Maureen realizes that I always credit her with this, but Maureen is my mentor, and she is the person who hired me and gave me my start in my career. We were at an event together, and Maureen was very kind to me, and she didn't really need to be. She was a big, important, powerful person, and I was a little nobody, and she was incredibly kind to me and wonderful, and we really hit it off and had a grand time at this event together, eating lunch, and she invited me to interview for a position, and everything I learned from Maureen Provost Ryan. So I am so excited that Maureen is here. The second person who is with us is Linda Lease. And Linda Lease is the principal of the search firm Lease & LeBeau. So after working for several years as a recruiter at two very prestigious search firms, she established her own in February of 1990. And she has a fabulous reputation of leading searches by assisting people and presenting outstanding candidates. And I will tell you, I know firsthand, as somebody who used Linda's services before I knew her, I had no idea who she was, when I was doing hiring at a law firm. And I remember saying to my boss at the time, every candidate that this woman has sent us is perfect for the job. So she does such a fabulous job of screening folks, and really there we could not have made a bad choice based on the work that she's done. So Linda is absolutely fabulous, and I am so excited to have both of you here to help us kind of get through the quagmire of how do you put a resume together. So Maureen and Linda, welcome. Thanks for joining
us. Oh, it's our pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Great. Well, Maureen, let's start with you. You are a professional resume writer. So tell us what that means. What does somebody do when they call a professional resume writer?
Well, a professional resume writer I think of as a ghostwriter and a champion for the candidate. When you start working with a professional resume writer, they generally ask you to fill out a questionnaire about your background, or they interview you and take the information that you give them, and they synthesize it to create a presentation that's attractive and effective. It's a collaboration. You work with the writer to make sure that you like what they come up with. You go back and forth with edits until the document is just right, and then he or she provides you with final copies on diskette and hard copies usually. It costs between $175 and $800 or more, depending on your level. So it can be a pricey investment, but it's worth every penny.
So do you sit down and speak with them? Do you do it over the phone, or how does it work?
It can be either way. It can be a face-to-face consultation, or it can be done over the phone. A lot of the resume writers do it remotely, where it's done totally through email and by phone.
So what kind of questions do you ask people? What kind of information do
they
provide?
That's a great question. The questionnaire that I use is very comprehensive, and it's about 6 pages long, single-spaced, and it asks people to do a thorough in-depth analysis of their jobs that they've had, and basically to catalog all of the detail that goes into the resume. So the kinds of questions would be what kinds of accomplishments did you have in your job? What kinds of duties and responsibilities did you have? And of course, everything is geared towards getting at the accomplishments more than the duties and because the accomplishments are more interesting to the employers than the duties. If that helps a little bit.
So, well, what happens for these folks who are just graduating college and they say, I have no accomplishments?
That is a great question. Almost every graduate has a good deal of experience that they gained in summer and part-time jobs or internships. Volunteer experience is valid for the resume. All of this reveals the skills and accomplishments that they have to offer. So non-paid experience is valid experience for the resume and should be utilized. So I really have never met anybody who didn't have enough to fill up one-page resume with elegant use of white space and wide margins, and or they had plenty to fill up even with normal margins, which would be narrow margins, and so usually there's plenty to fill up one page, is what I'm trying to say.
I have to laugh. I have to share this quick personal story. Last year, my nephew, who was in the 5th grade, had heard a story. We were telling him about Legoland and how they were hiring people to build toys. And he said, that's a job I want. So I, of course, kiddingly said, well, you know, you can't get a job without a resume. And then the kid, like a dog with a bone, would not leave me alone until I help him put together a resume. He's in the 5th grade, and I managed to come up with a resume for a 5th grader. And it's exactly like you say. You look at, you know, what the person has, and it doesn't have, he obviously has no paid experience, but what are the activities he's involved in school? And so that was sort of my joke, that I can even write a resume for a 5th grader. So a college student has a lot more than they even realize they have.
Exactly right.
I also think,
sure,
too, as a college student, that it's really very relevant for them to put in maybe the courses that they've taken within their major that would apply to the position that they're trying to achieve at that point. So it shows that in combination with their internships, it's very appealing to the employer.
Especially since great that information that they studied is cutting-edge information.
Right, exactly.
It's interesting. I wonder, with the one of the stumbling blocks people may have is, how do I answer those questions on the questionnaire? So do you or do other resume writers really, I know, Maureen, that you've got that kind of coaching background. Are you able to pull things out of people when they come to you and say, I don't really know what I have? Or is that what they should expect? Or are they kind of on their own, here, fill out this form, and then I'll do what I can based on what you give me?
That's a good question. I think you're right that there's a lot of resistance to filling out the form from some people, and or that they feel a lack of confidence in filling out the form, or they feel that their past versions of the resume already cover it. An earnest approach to the form is really, really helpful. And even if they feel they're being repetitive, a new fresh approach to the form is extremely important to the process. So I do try to pull it out of them.
And I think that's why when I wrote the book and when we've been talking about this on the other shows, talk about everyone, when they think about their job search, they just start with the resume, and they really have to start with the self-assessment and the thinking through, as you say, what have you accomplished? Not just what tasks did you perform, but what did you accomplish? And so that helps you to figure out what it is that you have to offer an employer.
And that's part of the value added of having someone work with you, because it's so much easier just to write the duties and responsibilities than it is to write what you accomplished.
Right.
And especially for, I tell all my managers and senior directors that even, you know, while they have a position, that really on a monthly basis they should, at the end of each month, evaluate what they've done and what projects they have completed and accomplished. So that you'd be surprised if, you know, after you review that on a yearly basis, it's so much easier than to, you know, bring all that information to someone like Maureen, who then can really put it into the greatest form you could, you know, present to an employer.
Right. That's a great point, and I that's something that I know I tell my mid-career people, and when you start out, I tell them as junior people as well, you should have an ongoing resume. So the day you start your new job, you slap it on your computer, and then you think about things that you've done. I tell them update it once a quarter, adding either continuing education courses that you've taken or projects that you've completed, and just kind of a laundry list of those things. So this way, when you are doing a resume later on, you've got it all cataloged in one place. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it might be, there's your questionnaire, you know, the answers to all
exactly.
your questionnaire. But if you've got to pull it out of thin air, sometimes that's difficult for people.
So,
yeah, and I think people just, you know, time flies and you just forget what you've accomplished or what you've, even different projects that you might have worked on 5 years ago. Oh, my God, I forgot
right.
that I did that conversion you know, I saved the firm, you know, $200,000 with, you know, switching a contract. So I think that, you know, it's really important to do that.
So I see my role as being the synthesizer, the collaborator, and the person who can edit it down
yes.
to a coherent statement. Because sometimes people get lost in the woods, and
mm-hmm.
they need it to be you know, synthesized down to something that's a summary statement.
Right. Well, one of the things I'm curious about, because professional resume writers is. That's sort of new, you know, for folks. So what kind of training did you get that would make you different from them going to their Aunt Mabel for help on writing their resume?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, I as you had said before, I had worked in schools for many, many years on various resumes, and I have a bachelor's degree in English, so that helps having just a baseline of information on what a sentence should be structured. And it seems to me that that there are courses that could be taken, and the National Association for Resume Writers that they offer conferences and, you know, mini conferences and teleseminars and a lot of online training that that can be given to help hone your skills on how to be a good resume writer. So that and there are many, many books. For instance, one of the things I was going to say to people tonight was that if you're not going to hire a resume writer, to buy the books by Susan Whitcomb called Resume Magic, Interview Magic, Job Search Magic, and Cover Letter Magic, that they are phenomenal resources. And it's almost as good as having your own career coach sitting right next to you, giving you the advice that you need. So that's Susan Whitcomb, in case anybody's writing that down. And so there are resources, and there are Louise Kurzmark and Wendy Enelo is those are two other big names in our field, and they write wonderful books that are compilations of excellent resumes. So just looking at excellent resumes can also help you, hone your ability to see an excellent resume and apply the techniques.
Great. Those are great resources. The Resume Magic, Whitcomb, what's her name?
Susan Whitcomb, Whitcomb.
Great. Great resources, great resources. But I would also think, too, one of the values, I mean, so certainly someone who's incredibly motivated reads the book could probably come up with something, but there's something about having an objective eye looking at it and being able to help you tell your story in a more effective way. It's hard to, I mean, I do this for a living. It's really hard to do my own resume, right? I mean, so really having somebody else put it together for you, it's much more powerful, and I think you get a stronger document.
Well, that's good that you can do that. Some people can do it for themselves,
right.
But it takes a certain talent to be able to do it. But it's not everyone's talent, and I think that even the most adept people can benefit from having someone else look at it, like a best friend, a colleague, and certainly for typos, it's important to have other people look at your resume with a critical eye,
right,
and proofread it for you.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the structure of a resume. So,
okay.
You know, we hear about reverse chronological order, functional resumes, expertise resumes. Do you have – people always ask me which is the right one. Do you have a favorite or a favorite format that you use that you advise people with?
Yes, I feel strongly about this, and I think the employers feel strongly about this, and Linda will probably want to comment on this as well. I think the employers really detest functional resumes, and they really prefer reverse chronological resumes presented in a traditional format. So therefore, I prefer reverse chronological resumes as well. And sometimes I'm able to use the best of both formats in a hybrid resume where you use the features of both. So, for instance, you might have a reverse chronological list of jobs followed by skills clustered together and then the duties listed that the person had achieved. So it's kind of hard to describe, but there's a way to do a hybrid resume if a person really wants to not put such a focus on the chronology of their job search and put more of a focus on the functionality of their resume. So there is a middle ground.
Linda, what's do you have a take on that?
I agree with Maureen. I think also too what employers like to see now is again the highlighted accomplishments. So sometimes I'll tell candidates to maybe put a paragraph of that first and then start to list their, you know, employment. It also depends on how long someone's working, how long, you know, are they out 10 years, 20 years, are they just getting out of college? Obviously, if someone's getting out of college, the first thing you want to see is what college they went to, what the GPA was, and what they studied. 15 years out, I don't put, even if it's, you know, Harvard, I don't put college first. Obviously, then I would have, I really like accomplishments where that would be structured first, and then I would, after that, I go into the employment. I also, sometimes you could list the employment, and then within that, each employment have a section of accomplishments that they, you know, had achieved while they were at that firm. So I think, you know, it's basically the same thing that Maureen is speaking about in the hybrid, because it's really doing, you know, both trying to achieve the same thing. I also think, too, it's a different market than it was 5-6 years ago. So whereas people then would have just, you know, listed, I worked here for 10 years this, with all the eliminations and the different flexibility and the transitions that people have gone through in the last 5-6 years, you're obviously seeing less stability on the resumes than before. So I do think that to show what you've done in each place is very important.
Well, I'm also, Linda, you work with a lot of sort of upper management type folks. What about people who are trying to move from one industry to another? Does that change? I mean, would a functional resume be more appropriate then to show the skills? Because the names of the companies from one industry to another may not have the same impact.
Well, I think that it depends on the area that you are. Let's say you've been 20 years an HR director, you know, you've been human resources in a law firm. Those skills, that skill set is definitely transferable to go to investment firm, banking firm, whatever firm it is. So the thing is that, again, you would want to highlight the things that are HR-driven and, you know, whether you could do it in any industry. So I think it's important that you could definitely transfer that skill set from one to another. If you're talking about someone who's been a managing attorney or, you know, a litigation paralegal, then that's going to be harder to transfer from one, you know, to start over in a new career. That is going to be difficult. And I think at that point you might even have to, you know, have a little different kind of additional education in order to promote that you want to try to do this new career now.
So what I'm hearing from you folks is that the most efficient way to do this is to do it in the reverse chronological order, highlighting the skills and expertise within each employer.
Yes,
I agree. That's the best way to go. And then again, the reason I wanted to kind of point out a distinction for them, that's as a general rule. But if you're doing something like going from being a paralegal to a completely different career path, that may not work best for you. And so one of the things I always try and talk to people about is hear the best practices and know that it's not always the best advice for everybody sitting on the telephone or, you know, that it's listening to the show. There may be something specific that you need to do that's a little off the beaten path. And don't be afraid to do that as long as your resume tells your story in an interesting and compelling way.
That's right. There's a technique for them.
Right. I also think, too, is they have to, the new position that they're looking to obtain, they have to try to think about, okay, what did I do in my previous roles that I may be able to bring out that would be helpful in this new role? So, I mean, you know, sometimes I'll tell people, let's say someone's an administrator or someone's in a broad position, I'll tell them, you know, have 3 different resumes that gear towards the position that you're going for now, because you've done all of those 3 different roles in the role that you just had.
Right.
So I think that everyone could really, if they think about the new role that they want to go to, there's always things that maybe you could bring out to say, this is why now I want to do this.
One of the things, and my take has always been, and I'd be interested to hear what you guys have to say, is making sure you use the proper language. And one of the things, and this was a few years ago, I was working with an HR person from a law firm world, and they talk in law firm world about recruitment and professional development. That's the jargon. Well, in corporate America, where she was trying to make the shift to, but they used the term, at the time they were a little bit further ahead of the law firms, it was called talent management and talent acquisition. So even though she had done those exact things, she used different language to describe it, and when she would be applying online, she would be within 20 minutes getting the, you know, thanks, but you don't meet the qualification, and it was just sort of mind-boggling. Like, but wait, that's exactly what she's done, but she didn't have the right buzwords. So
right,
what's your experience in terms of how important buzzwords are?
Exactly, totally. And what would have that taken for her to do that research before she submitted her resume? And she wouldn't be fabricating anything if she's done the same exact thing, just it's just termed differently.
Right.
So again, if she thought about the role that she was going to and then, you know, research that and then try to put into what, try to transition it to the new role.
And see, my listeners, that's why you have to do the market research and the self-assessment before you just start putting a resume together, because you want to make sure that you have the right roles and you know how to tell your story in a way that your audience needs to hear it. So, Maureen, you had something in one of the documents that you wrote where you talk about the ATS system. Can you tell us
yes.
a little bit about those?
Sure. Applicant Tracking System is what ATS stands for, and I'm sure the candidates in the audience have heard about this because it's a stumbling block for so many people now. It's essentially that so often a human being is not the first line of defense when you're applying for a job, that often now a computer is the first thing that evaluates your resume. So now the game of looking for a job is how do you get past the ATS system, and you have to make sure that you have the key words on your resume so that you're the ideal candidate that the computer is looking for, and that you get past that first round of evaluation so that a human being does get to see your resume. So I'm sure Linda is much more of an expert about this than I am, but that's a lot of resume writers sit around and scratch our heads and say, how do we help people get past the ATS system? It's such an important thing to have the buzzwords correct on the resume so that
exactly.
they have yes. So
because that's really what that is picking up is all those buzzwords.
Yes.
So again. You know, that's really important to do the research before you even submit the resume, because if it does not have that terminology, it's not going to get picked up.
And a good example would be that talent management.
Exactly.
Right. And it's interesting. I think that's the thing that is so frustrating to so many people, and we've been hearing all these horror stories. You know, the Wall Street Journal did a piece a couple of months ago that talked about the president of a company who submitted his resume, put it through their scanning system, their ATS system, and he was rejected. So they've got these things set at such unbelievably high hit rates that it's almost impossible for anybody to meet them, and that's something that seems to make job seekers completely crazy. I'm working on getting someone on my next show who actually writes those programs to come on and talk to us about sort of what they're trying to accomplish to see if we can't crack that code a little bit. But
think that, too, a lot of those positions that are more generic, I think, that when you get to, if they really want to do a search for a specific type of candidate, I don't really think that they really utilize that. I think sometimes that those are more for a generic type of role because they just, you're not going to be able to find the right candidate through that way.
Right. I think that's right. And that's, you're right. So that sometimes employers are shopping a little bit too, just to see what's out there, right? Yeah. Just to kind of keep their pipeline filled.
They can be, and also, too, there's also a sense of, you know, the higher level the position or even a mid-manager, you know, do you really just, you know, you're not going to put your resume up on Monster or, you know, these other sites or ladders, you know, if you're presently working, because there's no confidentiality. So I think, you know, it depends on the type of role that's really going to affect.
Well, and that's a good question. I mean, there's two things here that I was thinking. You know, in terms of, used to be that you only needed maybe one or two versions of your resume. Now it strikes me if you are applying to something online that you see the position, you almost want to tweak your resume to make sure that you've described your experiences in using language from the ad itself. So now you could have, you know, 20 different versions of your resume based on the types of jobs you've applied for. Is that... Is that something job candidates should be thinking about, or is that a little extreme?
I think that, you know, you have your fundamental basic resume that really is who you are. That's your story. And I think you could definitely tweak it for different roles that you may have the skill set for. I do think that there are some buzzwords that you could put into each one before you're, you know, submitting your resume to a website. But I don't, is it really that someone's going to be able to do 20 different roles? So, I mean, you could tweak it to a point, but I don't really think you're changing the fundamental basics of it.
Right. You may just change a word here or there to make it match the words that's in their ad. Yes. Perfect.
Exactly.
Perfect. Well, this leads to sort of another question. In the high-tech age, do people even need paper resumes anymore, or is everything done online?
This is a great question, because a lot of times my clients tell me, I don't even need the hard copies of the resume that you want to give me, because I always want to give them, you know, 20 copies of their resume on a beautiful paper with, laser printing and the whole thing, and a CD. And they really they say, I'm doing everything online, through databases and whatnot. So a lot of times they tell me they don't even really need the paper version. But of course, when they get to the interview stage, they do need the paper version. But I think they do need the hard copy of the resume as well as the electronic version.
Linda, do you have any thoughts on that? What do employers say?
As far as everything is electronic, but, you know, it's still the basic fundamentals of, you know, when you're actually doing your face-to-face interview, and the process could be 5 to 6 rounds of interviews, you know, make sure Maureen gives you, 30 copies of that hard copy, because you're definitely going to have to present it to everyone that you meet.
Yes.
So, I mean, in some ways, yes, the first introduction as far as just submitting your resume is electronic, but then after that, you would definitely have to have the hard copy.
And one of the things that I've said to people, too, is when you have the hard copy, everybody else is applying online. Sometimes you send something in snail mail in addition to sending it online. Maybe it gets noticed a little bit quicker because they're not getting a whole lot of paper resumes. So sometimes that's something that can make you stand out in the crowd as well. And, again,
right.
I wouldn't do that for everybody, but if there is a job that you're thinking you're really gung-ho about, that may be and you don't have a contact or somebody inside, that may be a way to get noticed.
Right.
Good.
I was going to say, they say if you're noticed 5 times, that your chances of getting the job are increased that much better. It's a worthwhile thing, like, to get the thank you notes out there, and so anything you can do to be noticed 5 times is good.
Right. Although I have to add the caveat, but you want to be noticed for being professional. You don't want to be noticed for doing something bizarre.
Without a doubt.
And the thing is that Maureen just said something that I know is off topic a little, but I do think it's very important. You know, people tend not to follow up with thank you notes, which is really a very bad thing to do. You need to follow up and thank whoever you met for your time, because I've had people who have not gotten the position because they never followed up. And it's really important, and those thank you notes are very vital. And also, you know, Maureen made another good point about proofing your resume. It's the same thing even with the thank you note. It has to be proofed.
People tend
even to do like a 4-sentence note, and you're rushed or you're this or whatever. And you cannot believe how many people have a typo in their thank you note.
I had one guy who was a fabulous candidate, and he was working through a recruiter. The recruiter loved him. The company loved him. It was all a go. He sent a thank you note, misspelled the name of the company. And they withdrew the offer. I am somebody who, you know, all right, somebody spells my name wrong, I don't get all bent out of shape about it. But it was one of those things that was just the you know pet peeve of the hiring person and just blew the whole thing for him, and it was heartbreaking.
There is some, you know, I get it. If I had a dollar for every time I was called Lisa, but there is a very valid point in that. If you're, you know, this is a document that you're sending to a prospective employer, you have to really make sure that you give it proper time, because it does kind of show of, you know, what your follow-up skills are like, what your thoroughness, what your, you know, I've had people who reverse the managing partner's name. Well, okay, so I'm going to give you a $2 million project to work on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is some truth that it really does need to be correct.
Right. And you need to not be sloppy, because that's the thing. I think we say, well, it's a numbers game. Let me just get as many things out there as possible. Don't spend enough time just tending to those details. For this poor guy, I felt very bad because it was so out of character for him.
Right,
so,
I know. Trust me, I've had candidates like that myself that you want to cry for them because they're really the right person for the job.
Exactly. So you have to, you know, don't mean to put any more pressure on people, but right. What we're trying to say is pay attention, because these details can make a difference. They can make or break you. So you really want to make sure you do nothing to get in your own way of getting the position that you want.
Right.
For something like that. Linda, what's some of the biggest mistakes you see? Because, you know, Maureen is helping them put it together, and there are going to be people who don't use professional resume writers. They just kind of put something together on their own. What are some of the biggest mistakes you've seen people make?
Well, you know, Maureen said something in the very beginning that's very valid, is that people tend, just like they don't like to negotiate for themselves, people tend not to realize or also bring out the best in themselves. So sometimes their resume really don't do justice to what they have previously done. And so that's one point that they really have to look in, going back to your self-assessment and really say, you know, I've done this, I'm capable of doing this, and don't shortchange themselves and not put that on their resume. I think another point is that sometimes, you know, I'll get a 4-page resume. No one wants to read that. Mm. It's too elaborate. It's each job is very repetitive sometimes with what they did previously. So that's something that's not good. Let's see, what else? Sometimes, believe it or not, we get a lot of resumes that have typos that are not grammatically correct. Mm-hmm. So some of those are some of the things that, you know, people really do that to harm themselves. I mean, part of our service, if it's a candidate that we are going to work with, that we do try, you know, to help them with the resume and help them with their thank you notes, and, you know, that's just part of our whole service. But
right.
It's important as I said, your resume is a story, and it's very important that your story be told the right way.
One of my favorite stories was somebody who came in to me with a 4-page resume, and I was sort of overwhelmed. And when I really looked at it closely, he had his publications, or publications, he called the section, he had listed every paper that he had written through college and graduate school as a publication.
Oh my God.
So every course that he took, we had a paper, had handed a paper. He wrote, so we're like, no, that can't be. But I had someone else who had an unbelievably accomplished career. She had a 3-page resume, and I will tell you, it was one of the few times I looked at it and I thought, I don't have any idea what to cut, because this is all fabulous. I mean, there was
so many.
She was a bit more senior.
Sometimes you will have that exception that someone has a 3-page resume, but it's really good and it's really valid, and that's the way it should be.
So what's your opinion with that? So there's not that rule that everybody always hears, oh, I should only have a 1-page resume. Where do you guys stand on that one?
I think that was like 20 years ago. And, you know, as long as a 2-page resume for someone who's been working, you know, more than 10 years or something to that extent is totally acceptable.
Right.
You know, if someone's coming right out of college, I would think a 2-page resume would not be the most practical thing. But I think after that, 2 pages is definitely acceptable. I don't think you're going to do yourself justice with 1 page.
Right.
But
and that's always been my thought. I laugh when you said 20 years ago, because I think one of the reasons it used to be a 1-page resume was because it was annoying for the employers, because they had to photocopy the resumes to send to whoever's going to be interviewing you, and the pages got mixed up, and it was pain. And now it's just so much easier. They press a button, and, you know, all 5 interviewers are going to have your resume in front of them, so it makes it a little bit easier.
Right, or remember when people had a fax thing in the resume over?
Oh, God. And that curly paper fax. Oh, we're dating ourselves, ladies. Let's stop. What about having an objective on their resume? What do you think about that?
Well, I feel strongly about this. Objectives are out, because objectives put the emphasis on what the candidate wants, and the new emphasis is what the employer is going to gain. So the objectives are out and summary statements are in. So it should be more like an offering. And I like, in particular, a banner headline where you summarize in 1 or 2 words in bold caps the type of job for which you are applying, followed by a statement of what you have to offer. So something like, you know, marketing assistant in bold caps, and then administrative assistant, or whatever words you would use, offers 20, 25 years or 12 years experience in blah, 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 like that. So it goes, in resume language. And so you sort of get the gist of what I'm saying, to start off the resume with that kind of an opening. So I think that's very compelling.
I agree with Maureen. Objectives, I never liked objectives because I just thought they limited people.
Yeah.
You know, and you put on one objective that you want to obtain this position, yet the same company might have another position that would be wonderful for you. So I do like the summary as well. Again, if you're going to do that banner, that's great, but that may have to change.
Yeah.
And that may have to be tweaked from position to position.
Position.
Because if you have, let's say, an HR manager who's done recruiting and employee relations and compensation analysis, yet this role is for a recruiting manager. So then, you know, she'd have to tweak that if you were going to do the banner. Versus
right.
just in the summary putting, you know, professional with, you know, 15 years of human resources specializing in blah, 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 blah. So I think with the banner, you might just have to tweak that a bit. But I totally agree as far as I never cared for objectives. And a summary is wonderful.
And I think the banner, the summary, as you say, that's the thing that you can tweak. So rather than change, you know, going to wordsmith each job description, you can put the buzzwords up there that apply to the particular position. I have a very strong opinion about some people in their banners and their summary that use a lot of adjectives to describe themselves. Do you have any thoughts about that? You know, fabulous people skills and highly effective professional and they just kind of rub me. They're sort of like chalk or fingernails on a chalkboard to me. But do you find them to be effective?
Linda, why don't you take that one and then I'll come to comment.
I think that
you can disagree with me. It's okay.
No. I think that objectives. I mean, adjectives are very good, but they have to be corporate ones. So you pointed out fabulous. That's terrible. But if you versus competent or, you know, educated or different, there's different words that obviously you could use, but those fluff words, wonderful, fabulous, seasoned, those will hurt you.
Great.
But sure. I think that, you know, there are words that can be used that will definitely describe, you know, who you are, but in a much better frame.
So not all adjectives are created equal. when it comes
right.
to resumes.
and what I'm hearing from my sleuthing in this area is that it's cultural, and that, for instance, in the legal profession, it's taboo to put adjectives at the top of the resume, whereas in corporate America, it's okay.
I think in law firms it's fine. But again, it's the words that you use. And
yeah.
even in corporate America, as in investment banking or, you know, that type of area, I mean, I'm not talking about PR or advertising, but I think, again, it's the words that you use. I mean, obviously when you're doing the summary, that's really your time to shine. That's
yes.
really your time to grab your audience to say, oh, you know what? This candidate looks good. Maybe we should do a phone interview.
Yeah. And it's interesting because that goes back to doing some of the market research, because what's going to work for a law firm or an investment bank probably is not the same thing that's going to work at, you know, a green company or MTV or something that's
Google.
You know, more creative
yeah.
kind of industry. Yeah, Google.
Right.
So you really... You need to know those things and know who your target audience is before you begin to put together this marketing material, which is really what your resume is.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, if you're, there's a big difference between going in for an interview at Paul Weiss and going into Google. Are you going to wear the same attire? I don't think you should.
Good.
I mean, because
right.
you have to know what your target audience is. If you're going into Google or you're going into... you know, Comedy Central, they're not going to want to see someone who's all pent up in that beautiful Armani suit and the tie, and that's just not who their culture is.
Right, right. So you got to know what you got to know your audience, like everything else.
Exactly.
You know your audience.
Right.
So, just a couple other questions I get asked all the time. I want to make sure that we get answers from you folks. First, I hear older workers all the time think they should always – there was a book out called Botox Your Resume, and the advice was never put your resume your dates on your resume if you're over 40. I wonder if you two have an opinion on that.
I've seen it work for people, and I've seen it where they're willing to tell the dates once they have the interest of the employer secured. So I hope I've made myself understood on that one, because it's like once they've piqued the interest of the employer, they're very willing to come up with the dates and to tell them, okay, I graduated in 1978 from such and such college. But they want to first get the employer's interest before they give up the date.
Well, will the employers be interested without the dates? I'm sorry, Linda, I cut you off.
Yeah, the employees will definitely be interested without the dates, because legally you're not even allowed to ask what date you received your degree. But the thing is that also, I totally understand what Maureen's saying. They're going to, at a certain point, you know, you have to put, they're going to do a background check. There's not one firm, basically, that doesn't do that anymore. So, you know, they're going to ask you what type of degree you received, and then you're going to have to put the year that you received it on the application. So, you know, there's no way that they're not going to know. I have to say, I can only speak for law firms, but I don't really see a lot of age discrimination in that area. I know that it does exist. I personally would advise someone not to put their years next to their school education.
Oh.
Okay. But they would put it certainly with their employers, the time frame for their that they worked with the employers, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. But what I wouldn't put, you know, for mine, my degree, I wouldn't put 1982 down. I would just list the degree.
Right.
So on my resume, I would not put the year down that I graduated.
Right. So you are talking...
I just feel that until you get in front of your audience and that you could really market yourself, you know, you just want to make sure you have every advantage that you possibly could have.
At some point, though, the employers are going to figure out how old you are. If they're looking at the amount of history, they're going to realize you didn't just graduate from college in May. Right. So
without a doubt. And as I said, you're going to have to put it on the application, which is probably going to be the initial interview, because they're going to do the background check off of the application.
I guess what we're really asking is, does it seem evasive or strange not to put the dates on the resume? And does anybody hold it against you for not putting it down?
I don't think so. I think the more I see so many without the dates, then, you know, unless you're talking about someone who graduated 10 years or less, then, of course, I see a lot of those dates.
Right.
And then I'll question if I don't see a date. But after that, I see so many resumes that don't have the dates. They'll have an MBA, they'll have, you know, a PhD, they'll have a JD next to the school, but they won't have the date that they graduated.
And I guess it begs the question, but at least, as Maureen, as you say, it doesn't close the door. People will ask you the question. You're going to have to offer it up anyway, but it doesn't preclude you. You know,
right.
It doesn't get in the way. So again, it's all about telling your story in a way that's useful to you, that, you know, kind of gets you to the next point, and that's what we're trying to do.
Right.
Exactly.
One of the other things, I know we're sort of running short on time, but I wanted a couple other things I noticed are different on resumes. And, you know, for folks right out of college, these are some of these things may be no-brainers, but those who are, it's you know, kind of like going back and dating. You got to learn the new rules. But people don't put their addresses anymore on resumes. Is that true?
Yeah, some people still do. I think it's a matter of preference. I actually, especially for people who are going to be sending it through on different, you know, sites or different employers, I would advise not to. I would just put your name and your email address. I think with so much going on with identity theft and different, you know, areas like this, that I don't really think the address is valid until you bring somebody in.
Right. That's the big thing, I think. Wait, Maureen, did you have a thought on that?
Yeah, so far I've been able to avoid this question with my clients. And so because to me it looks, what's the word, evasive and somewhat paranoid not to put it on. So far all of my clients have used their addresses. And to good effect, I think, too, because usually they live in a nice town that makes a nice impression on the person who's reading the resume. So I just kind of advocate putting the address in. It's kind of a tough issue because
it's a new thing.
It's a new thing because people are nervous about their identity.
The resume that you submit on the web or on to a site is a resume that is electronically sent, whereas when you go in face-to-face to meet with the HR department of, you know, Colgate-Palmolive, then you could have a resume that has the whole address on there.
Yes.
But I think it's just when people are just submitting it randomly to different companies and different sites, that's when I think they feel very insecure about having everything out there.
Right.
You know,
right,
your
right.
cell number, your address, your home number. It, you know, I wouldn't even advise it myself.
Well, you make a good point, Linda. Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, it's like everything else. Most of the times I find when people ask me any kind of job hunting question, I usually start the answer with, well, it depends. Because there may be sometimes, too, where if you're trying to establish, that you're going to a different geography, you know, you want to use a local California address to show that you've got ties in that area. Sometimes it's helpful to have the address on there. So it's going to depend. But I do think it still looks odd to me to not have an address on there. But more and more of the college students that I'm working with don't have it on, and I'm sort of getting a little bit more used to seeing it. So I'm not sure employers have a strong reaction one way or the other, you know, it's just as long as they can get in touch with you at the end of the day.
Yeah,
there are two thoughts.
They're fine with it as long as they're going to if it's going through their website, they're just going to get back to you by email anyway. And I mean, for my clients, they always just see the candidate's name. And of course, if they want to see this person, they're going to get in touch with me. So it's almost very similar that, you know, it's just an email address, even if they're just going to do it directly.
Right. Well, the piece of advice that I have for people when it comes to resumes, there are two. When you're emailing to an employer or even to a recruiter such as yourself, Linda, I say they should PDF it. Because, then nobody can make any changes on it, not that a recruiter or anybody else is going to make any changes, but also for formatting issues. You want to make sure that, because sometimes if people's printers or defaults are set differently, it prints oddly. So you want to make sure it looks the way you want it to look, would be my thought. And also, after you get, and Maureen, I don't know if you give this to folks, but after you get the disc, make sure you save a copy of it in, what do they call it, not in document form, but in the simple file, text file. So
yes.
This way, because if you want to get rid of all of the bolds and all the spacing things in one space, because if you have to cut and paste and put it onto some of these websites, it doesn't always the pretty ones don't always translate well, and then you've got to clean them up once they're posted. Whereas if you have the simple text file, you clean it up once without all the fancy fonts and things, and then it cuts and pastes a little nicer. But it's always better if you can put a PDF file in. I think those things are great. So we're getting near the end, and I wanted to give you both an opportunity to give your best piece of advice to resume writers and job seekers, something that they ought to know based on years of your experience. Maybe we'll start with Linda. Got a best piece of advice for my listeners?
Make sure that your resume is accurately and truly and in the most efficient way telling your story. It's a story, and it has to be tailored, and it has to be really thought out and researched so that it's going to the right appropriate parties, and that they're so inundated. We could get 1,000 resumes a week. And it's just the way that the market is right now. And so it's important that this is what's going to get you in the door. And after that, you have to market yourself to your best ability. But it really has to be, like, the best work that you've ever produced. Because it's just too competitive.
Yeah. Great advice. Do your best work. Maureen, what do you got?
Something simple. Make sure it's pretty. That it's a pretty resume, that it's something that the eye is attracted to, that there's plenty of bold and white space and margins that make sense, and that it fits beautifully on the page, and this use of horizontal lines, and that it just looks great, that it's appealing to the eye, that it's something that is attractive and is compelling to the reader. So it's prettiness is an odd concept, but it when you see it.
Yeah, visually attractive. I think you're right that someone could look at it and things pop off the page at them. And I think that's because it represents
that's
you
important.
When you're not there.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's very important. You want things to pop out of the page because you want to grab somebody.
Yeah. Well, ladies, Linda, Maureen, I can't thank you enough for sharing your years of wisdom with our listeners here tonight. And just wanted to give you the opportunity if candidates want to reach out to you, or how can they get in touch with you, Linda?
My email is linda@leaselebeau.com, or you could go to our website, which is www.leaselebeau.com.
And
Maureen?
I recommend contacting me through my email, which is mopro.ryan@aol.com. And I'm happy to send everybody a copy of my top 25 tips for creating a beautiful resume.
And it is worth sending Maureen an email to get that. I have a copy of that list, and it's incredibly helpful and kind of get you started as you're putting together your resumes.
Maureen, I'm going to grab one of those, too.
Oh, good.
And moproryan@aol.com. Fabulous. Ladies, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight, and thank everyone for listening. And I want to remind everyone to don't forget to listen to some of the upcoming shows on blogtalkradio.com, Life Coach Radio Network. Tomorrow we have at 9 p.m., Creating Opportunity in the Face of Adversity, a great show that anybody in the job search could gain some valuable information out of that. Friday at 12 noon is Free Coaching Friday, 3 Steps to Sustainable Success. Again, a great opportunity if you're trying to check out life coaching and sort of get a sense of what it all means. You get some free coaching there, and you can test it out for yourself. And then Sunday, one of our most popular shows is Super Soul Sunday at 12 p.m., and that's a show that's a big hit. Everybody enjoys that one. Like us on Facebook at KB Career Planners, and you'll get all the latest cutting-edge things and information about job hunting and career management. So, again, we hope that you'll go on that page and like us. And if you would like a copy of Don't Waste Your Talent, the book about the Highlands Ability Battery, please email me at kbrady@careerplanners.net. And, of course, you must go out and buy Get a Job, 10 Steps to Career Success, because it gives you all of this information and kind of walks you through the entire job search process. So thank everybody. Thank you so much, everybody, for being part of the show. And I'd like to sign off and say thanks for listening. And now it's time to go get a job. Have a great night, everyone. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.